Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday.
How's it hanging?
We are on to Dolphins Week. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is a short week, so we'll be hearing from Sal Capaccio. Normally on a Tuesday, the Bills have off, but with the Bills playing on Thursday, we'll hear from Sal. We've already got some injury designations from yesterday. We'll get to that here in just a moment. But Bills are 2-0. The Dolphins are 0-2, and they do not look like they're in a good spot at all.
It could not be worse for them on the vibes right now.
And to be fair, this is not like a surprising turn of events. This is not something where the Dolphins came in with lofty expectations and are 0-2. You could argue Kansas City maybe is this, where, you know, you just made the Super Bowl, you got blown out, Kelsey's coming back because he doesn't want to leave on that note, and they're 0-2. But to be fair, they haven't been blown out in these games. They haven't even looked necessarily dreadful in the games. They're just 0-2, suspensions, injuries have played a part into that. But you look at the Dolphins, they came into the season with the expectations of, ooh, this may not be good. And it's just continued into the season. They picked up some injuries absolutely as well. They have not had a healthy defense since July. Most of their secondary is hurt, including guys like Storm Duck, who isn't even particularly good, but he's a backup. And now he did not practice yesterday. And going into Thursday night, it feels like this could be the end for Mike McDaniel there. With them not playing again until Monday against the Jets, they're going to have double-digit days, 10, 11, whatever it is, to, if they wanted to, fire McDaniel, get the interim going, and get the ball rolling on that guy's message going into a Jets game, another divisional game.
And the funniest thing about New England, Miami here, that their game against New England, there was a flash of, okay, maybe they can get themselves out of the depths. A punt return touchdown after some solid defending going on, and they take a 27-23 lead against New England back on Sunday. 12 seconds after they take that lead, They lose it for the rest of the day. Because they give up a kick return touchdown immediately. And it's like, oh, you guys just can't at this point. You can't. You cannot. Against a New England team that has relatively proven itself in the point of the roster's not ready. Tua has himself a halfway decent game. But he has another back-breaking turnover. When? When they're trying to come back after that kick return touchdown was yielded. You look at Miami and just think, and especially Tua in particular at this point now, and you're like, this is a guy who's going to be given top five quarterback money next year? Oh, boy.
And he's not even...
he's not even the root of the problem, no. I don't think. But it just shows when you have a bad general manager winning power struggles and continuing to be the general manager, this is how disastrous it can get. Because Chris Greer is a bad general manager.
He's been there 9 years? Almost 10? Something like that. He's been there around the same time as Chris Ballard's been with the Colts. And they've had moments where they've been flashy and fun and exciting, 70 points, what have you. But for the most part, they've been easily the second fiddle to the Bills, even in a year where the Bills struggled and were at what point, what, 6-6 in a season, struggling mightily. We got a Ty Dunn article coming out about you know how bad at times McDermott's been with the Bills, what have you, and it doesn't matter. On the final game of the year, the Bills blow out the Dolphins in Miami and don't even play particularly well either in the blowout. And for me on that, and coming into the Dolphins game this week, ultimately probably being the last time the Dolphins play in the current Highmark Stadium, this is likely the last time. They don't look like they're going to make the playoffs and make a wild card and you know, go against the Bills in that sense if that were to end up happening. This is, in all likelihood, the last home Dolphins game at the current Highmark Stadium. And for me, I've talked a lot about this, Derek, of just you know, kind of growing to really love this rivalry. I grew up in the 90s or the late 90s, early 2000s, where both these teams were bad. Neither were really all that competitive. You have very, you know, small blips for both. I mean, the Dolphins don't go on a playoff drought, but, you know, they're small blips. The Bills have their kind of like weird years, but ultimately both are really bad and play very much second fiddle to the Patriots and even the Jets to a certain extent, who make two straight AFC championship games in that window. And so for me, it was hard to get the hate up. I didn't grow up during the Marino and Kelly days. I didn't grow up during the 20 straight losses. It was just a division rival, right? You didn't like them because they're in your division. You play them twice. Let's go. I'm all for that. But the last few years for me has both been like this weird understanding and loving the rivalry and really coming to appreciate it and looking forward to these games and what have you. But in that same breath, because the Dolphins have not taken that step forward, and if anything, has every time the Bills have taken another step forward and they keep retooling and chugging along, the Dolphins just seem to take another step back and another step back and another step back. Until now, I saw Nate Geary tweet out yesterday, like, you know, Dolphins fans usually have that, you know, starry-eyed, you know, look in their eyes.
A little bit of that.
In Bills games.
And
it's even, gone.
And it took 2 weeks. Because even heading into the season, there were enough Dolphins fans saying, no, we're fine. Everything's good. Why are they hating on us? There were enough of them doing that. And now you look at them and go, this is why everyone was hating on you. This is why you were being predicted to be disastrous. This is why you ended up opening the season 29th in power rankings, according to Mike Florio. Like, there's a lot of reasons why you're being picked to be a tire fire. And through 2 weeks, you have shown to be a tire fire. It's unfortunate for a neutral fan. I think for anybody here that ended up getting a little bit annoyed with the little brother complex that the Dolphins were forming to these Bills, you could care less. But the Dolphins vibes are so bad and so rough right now. You could even in Buffalo almost start to feel bad.
Almost.
I am picking my words precisely and carefully here. You could almost start to feel bad for them. If you are a more sympathetic heart, you would. But for the general Bills fan, it is getting so bad in Miami, you could almost start feeling bad for them. I know many won't. There's no love lost, especially with the older generations. They're here sitting down for the funeral in a suit and everything. They are the sharpest dressed people at the funeral of the Miami Dolphins' current regime. They're the Barry Allen meme at the tombstone.
It's exactly what it is. I mean, it's just there will be some who this is all they've ever wanted, right? Is to Miami to be completely in the dumpster, the Bills just running through them, the whole thing. And I won't disagree with you. And to be fair, Thursday night, be locked in. Can't wait to see a blowout. Hope to see a blowout. But the lead up to it is different for me now of just being like, they should be 3-0. They're 12.5 point favorites. That might even grow as the week goes on. And for me, I've gotten much more to a point, and this is probably true for a lot of fan bases who just are constantly in the playoffs and the division rivals maybe aren't, is that you look far more forward to the playoff rematches. One of the Cowboys' biggest rivals is not even the division, it's the 49ers. Why? They're playoff matchups.
Right.
Yeah, they've got the hatred with the Eagles and the Commanders, and of course. Like, that's a very...
And there's enough hate to go around.
Yeah, that's a very hate-filled division. And you still have that. But a part of me was like hoping Bills Dolphins during this run here would be like 49ers Seahawks during the Legion of Boom and Jim Harbaugh stay there, where it was like it was two Titans clashing. It was game of the year stuff, the whole thing. And instead, that has actually become Bills Chiefs, Bills Ravens. All for that. Don't get me wrong. The Bills are still taking part in that. I just did want that semblance of it's the entertainment factor.
Yes.
I want my most hated rival to kind of match you a little bit in a way, to give you that excitement, to give you a little bit of that stress. And there's been close games.
You see them the most amount of times.
You're right.
Why not hate them?
And there's been close games last year. You have to have a Tyler Bass last minute field goal. They almost lose to Skylar Thompson in a playoff game. But for the most part, it's been relatively easy for the Bills to walk through the Dolphins at times with impunity.
And even in the same year, last year, like, yeah, at home you needed the 60-yard field goal from Bass that ultimately gets the kicker's groove back. Hope he gets better soon. But the first game, it's not even close. Jamarcus Ingram has two picks and a pick six. And I think it's a combination of the Bills walking through Miami, especially in the win-loss column, and sometimes very much on the scoreboard too. Because, like, ready? The first time Miami seems like they're ready to start coming around and hanging out. The game against Buffalo. The Bills are playing backups after the first quarter. And Matt Barkley helps put Miami down as they were fighting for a playoff spot. They change coaches. And Miami is still second in command, so to say. And I think, honestly, the day it ended for Miami was the day that they hung 70 points on the Denver Broncos. That team peaked. And unfortunately, when you hit a peak, it is all downhill from there. The Bills, immediately the week after, put Miami in their place. After they score 70 points. And then the culmination comes from a couple of years ago. When the Bills are at 6-6, at a low point, we are legitimately wondering if the coach is going to get fired. The Ty Dunn article comes out. And what does Miami proceed to do? Wet their pants and give up the division and the 2 seed, culminated on Sunday Night Football. In a game where both teams wanted to lose that game in several ways and aspects. And a kick return touchdown, or a punt return touchdown, excuse me, helps Buffalo claim a lead that they would never relinquish from there. And Tua has one last chance. He throws a bad overthrow. And Taylor Rapp knocks the wind out of himself to win the game. That's where it all starts, with where they score 70 points and they're the future of the league. And then immediately the Bills are the team that puts you down. And the Bills are the one that take the division back from you after you don't claim it for yourself. And it is the combination of the direction these two teams are now going, plus these last few years, where it took players actively cramping in Miami to win one football game against them.
It feels like, and I know this almost sounds like a funeral, like it's not. I'm very happy the Bills are dominating the division. But in terms of somebody like myself who adores rivalries in sports, and that is a big aspect for me of loving sports. It's a big part of why I like college football, is the rivalries and the history behind them. Bills Dolphins has a lot of history. I want that to be another chapter in the book of these two teams. And this kind of now is just like, oh yeah, the Dolphins worked bad for around 30 years. And they went from getting just beaten up by the New England Patriots, having like every now and then a random win in Miami against Patriots teams that were simply far better. They still wouldn't make the playoffs. And they immediately followed that up with, and then they were curb stomped more aggressively by the Bills and Josh Allen. I mean, like these are oftentimes embarrassing games. As you mentioned, you have the 70-point game, and immediately they're blown out by Buffalo. Their highest of highs they had reached at that point. Doesn't matter. It barely lasts 10 days.
Doesn't even last 7.
No. Then they have the whole they can't beat any good teams. They are notorious. They almost become like the definition of, you know, a fair weather team. When it's warm, oh, they're amazing. When they're playing bad teams, oh, they look incredible. They play any good teams. They play in weather below 55 degrees. They're horrendous. We even saw this year already. Jalen Ramsey might not be a culture guy. Locker room doesn't love him, what have you. Goes to Pittsburgh the first week. He's making key defensive plays for them. There's a fire clearly lit under him. The Dolphins, Vic Fangio.
Vic Fangio.
I mean, run out of town. Goes to the Eagles, wins the Super Bowl that year. Defense looks incredible. But part of the reason why they win that Super Bowl as comfortably as they did was they made Patrick Mahomes look like a fool.
And their defense.
And they beat the hell out of him.
And their defense looks more steady than it was last year.
And Dolphins continue to flounder. They maybe have a historically bad defense. That secondary is horrendous. This is going to be a game, even with it being a Thursday night, you'll probably hear fantasy football experts saying you might want to start like a Keon Coleman, a Josh Palmer, a James Cook. Like, really lean into this. This is a bad defense by the Patriots. They look awful. Now, credit to Daniel Jones. He's done this two straight weeks. But they made Daniel Jones look infallible week one.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week, Ramondre Stevenson is putting up
right.
like Marshall Faulk levels of total yards. Drake May is dropping dimes. They're a team that doesn't really have much talent. And now you got Buffalo at home on a short week in which the Dolphins kind of can't fix any of their issues. And the Bills, while they have injuries, they're all on the defense. Their offense is pretty much completely healthy outside of Josh Allen having maybe a broken nose. We actually don't know for sure on that because McDermott was kind of, you know, a little bit playful and like, what is actually wrong there? It's just this has all the feelings of Bills fans will love it and we'll love it because it'll make Friday really fun. But this is all the makings of, by the third quarter, most of America's turned the game off.
And there was also even a vibe check from a now Bills practice squad edition. Jordan Poyer brings up that he always had his eye on this place, even when he was actively starting in Miami. And I know that that might just be a player's affinity for, you know, the city that he really established a career with. But if you have a locker room that's able to allow you to live more in the moment, you wouldn't be saying that publicly.
Yeah.
And they don't have a locker room that allows you to be in the moment and lock in. They don't. The only reason they were in contention for the seventh seed last year is because teams refused to claim it. Denver required Kansas City sitting everybody. And even then, Miami still would have been the first of the three teams eliminated.
Yeah.
Because Cincy won.
Mm-hmm.
And then Denver won. And Miami still would have been out of it. They're a hapless team that there is no bright future right now. Because of the damage that has been done. And again, for Chris Greer to have been the general manager since 2016, he's overseen three coaching changes. He should not be able to see a fourth.
No, I mean, that would almost feel like
he should be
unprecedented.
Honestly,
stuff.
Between the two of them, he should be the first one to go between him and Mike McDaniel.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, yeah.
And that's why I was punching air during the draft, because he actually made a good draft selection.
Right. We were both big. I mean, I was a huge Kenneth Grant guy. You came along for the ride with that one. And
then I'm inconceivably upset because Miami decided to actually make a good draft pick. And I'm like, now you decide to do this? Now Chris Greer decides to actually do something smart? Because of the fact that he has been here for 9 years. And again, he's seen three coaching changes. He's been in charge of three coaching changes. Maybe if you're changing through three coaches in your tenure, maybe the problem's you.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number two call. We will have Sal Capaccio at 11:30. It is also a Tuesday, so we'll have our primetime performers coming up at 11. But Well, we've got some time here. Again, number to call, 803-0550. Your thoughts on Bills-Dolphins, the rivalry. Does it still have the same juice for you with the Bills dominating as much as they have over the last few years? The Dolphins really taking a step back, and we'll go to the phones. We'll get connected to our fans. Izzy is with us first on this segment. Izzy, how are we doing today?
All right. Let me put this into a little bit of perspective. I've seen every Miami loss in the 70s, the first two in 70 and 71 in the rock pile, and the rest of the 70 in the brand new stadium. This rivalry for me will go on forever until we beat them 20 games in a row. And I don't have too much time left because I'm getting a little bit older. Mm-hmm. So you could figure this out. But anyways, for me, I love it. I love it. I love it. I mean, because this is, you know, every time I go to a Miami game, it was wonderful. It was myself and a couple other of my friends saw Joe Cribbs make a, you know, a touchdown in the fourth quarter to beat him in 1980. So I'll tell you guys, it goes on and on. That's the reason that the hatred for Miami existed. The other important fact is in the 70s, if the Bills would have won one of those games, they would have been in the playoffs with OJ. So what do you think, guys?
Yeah,
Izzy beat him 100.
I think that's fair, though, Izzy. And Izzy is that fan, Derek, I mean, you were talking about before we went on today, of like, that's the fan I know, the hatred will always be there.
And that's why I chose my word words carefully, because you, a fan like Izzy, like he basically said on that, of like, you could almost start to feel bad. But also, Izzy, if not for that one game in 2022, they've won 13 of the last 14 against Miami. So the number is actually not that far off.
They're starting to actually get close. And like, so I, like, I, that's the thing. But like, Izzy is that fan that I think about, of like, the hatred runs deep. Like,
he's sharp dressed at the funeral.
Right. And it's because it's like, no, I was there in the really bad times. You look, though, funny enough, at like the decade breakdowns of this rivalry from the 60s to the 2020s, the Dolphins only have a winning record in the 70s and the 80s. 70s, of course, it's 20-0. 80s, it's 11-9. But the 90s, the Bills lead that 15-9. In the 2000s, it's a tie, 10-10. 2010s, the Bills lead it 12-8. And in the 2020s, the Bills obviously lead it now 10-1. And Derek, you've mentioned it. They've won 13 of the last 14. They are dominating this team. Dolphins do have their Super Bowl. Don't get me wrong. Super Bowls, don't get me wrong. It's just, I think there is maybe this disconnect for certain fans. Like for me, like where I sit with this rivalry, I've loved that it's come back in recent years where both teams were good, competitive, right? And then the matchups had a little bit of juice to them. I do think that the rivalry is losing a little bit of juice because of how bad the Dolphins have been. I will say, though, I can understand where someone like Izzy comes from, because I look at the Patriots and I hope they get everything wrong.
Right.
I hope everything is a struggle for them. I hope, and this is coming from a Drake May fan from North Carolina, I hope they nailed the quarterback and get everything else wrong around them. And they have to go through that painful process like the Bengals are going through right now of, we have the guy and we're screwing it up. That's what I want. And that comes from growing up of just, you were the doormat to the team of the century.
At least a decade of,
yeah.
You did not touch them.
Yeah. So I understand that completely. I wish I felt that way for the Dolphins. I haven't gotten there yet, and in part I haven't gotten there because they haven't tested them at all. They just haven't.
And oddly enough, you don't really hear it from Dolphins fans. Like, mm-hmm. You do hear it from some Dolphins fans, or at least enough of them, like, they start to hate Allen more than Brady now. Why? Because you're barely touching them. On the scoreboard in the win-loss column, it's not even close. It's, quite frankly, disgusting.
I mean, it's Uncle Josh beating up on his nieces and nephews on Thanksgiving. That's what it is. It's we're playing backyard football, and it's little kids trying to beat up their 30-year-old
uncle.
Thank
you for adding context.
Like, I mean, that's what it is. That's what this has all been. It's been little kids playing backyard football with the grown-ups, and the grown-ups are like, I'm going to humble you here.
We're going to have some fun. You know what it is? It's the mascots playing the kids.
The mascots playing the kids. It's what it's been even before Josh's ascension.
And yet, oddly enough, four of the last six Bills wins against Miami have been one-score games.
But a lot of it has been you physically can't stop that guy. 803-0550, the number to call. Your thoughts on the Bills-Dolphins rivalry, with it being Dolphins week. The Bills do play them on Thursday night. Potentially the final time Dolphins will be at the current Highmark Stadium. We'll get a word in with Sal Capaccio at 11:30. Bills do not have off today, with it being a short week. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour number one rolls along here on a Tuesday. Coming up at 11, we'll have our top five primetime performers. It was a hard list to get here.
We had a lot of internal struggles.
It was a hard list. It's 2 weeks in, and already I'm like, oh boy, like who do we put to the honorable mentions? Who's left off entirely? I had a struggle last night into this morning. Monday night doubleheader, though, Derek, last night. Real quick thoughts on this. I saw almost none of the Chargers-Raiders game. I saw about the first quarter, and I was like, I got to get up early. I'll check the box score later. Tampa-Houston was a ball. And it was not like an aesthetically great game. It was not two juggernauts going back-to-back.
It was drama-laden, though.
It was drama. Baker Mayfield, you thought initially, on the not the fourth-down scramble, but a scramble a little bit earlier in the game, you thought maybe he hurt himself. And he hurt his knee. Nope, he's just jawing at Gardner Johnson.
And of course, it's Gardner Johnson.
You know, watching both those defenses too, and the Bills play these teams back to back. I heard that on Howard Picks the Bills this morning. You know, I also kind of just remember that too. I'm like, oh yeah, they're going to play these teams back to back. That's fun. Both defenses are super fun. I mean, they just come at you in waves. In a certain extent, though, watching Houston, there is a little bit of like a. We're just throwing everything at you, and if it screws up, it screws up, but we've got talent to make up for it. Where Tampa, it felt much more deliberate in how they're doing things.
It is more methodical.
Yeah, and Baker Mayfield, outside of Josh, outside of like the big three in terms of watchability, like, yeah, Mahomes, Lamar, Allen, they're super watchable, they're super fun, and it's just kind of objective at this point. I don't know how you don't enjoy watching Baker Mayfield play football. And I appreciate him so much more now that he's not in Cleveland. And I can just, as an NFC quarterback, I can just watch him and love every second of it. Like, even my Texas bias is not getting me like to like hate Baker Mayfield. I thoroughly enjoy watching him play football. Is he perfect? No. But I really enjoy watching him.
But Mayfield can deal. And that's the thing. He's also been very good over these last couple of years. And Tampa has recognized we do need to, in order to get the best out of him, supplement him with talent. And it's working. It's working. That's the thing. And then Baker sometimes does things, though, where
He gets a little loosey-goosey every now and then.
Sometimes he gets a little loosey-goosey, but then he makes plays where you're like, that's why Cleveland took him number one overall.
The fourth down scamper. There's no reason he gets
fourth
that.
And 10, he gets 15 yards, escaping the pocket, running around, and is he perfect? No. You get him to his left, it's a little uncomfortable. Still. But if you give Baker time, or if you chase him out and he's rolling to the right, it's where he's at his most dangerous.
Yeah.
And Tampa Bay said, nope, we're going to keep drafting him some talent. Here's Emeka Buka.
And I think that's the thing, too, is like Tampa is so underrated in terms of like the best run organizations in the sport. Even when they got Brady, that was Peyton Manning going to Denver. He went to a ready-made roster that just needed a quarterback. Brady does the exact same thing with Tampa. And you've seen them continue to do that post-Brady. Have they gone to another Super Bowl? No. And look, they lost to Jaden Daniels last year in the playoffs, but the year prior they beat the Eagles. And this year already they're off to a hot start of maybe, what, winning their sixth straight NFC South title? You know, they beat Atlanta week one. It's great. And they're off for the races. Baker has fully flourished into this 4,500-yard passer. Now, I mean, with Cleveland, it was actually you don't want him to pass the ball too much. We want to keep his passing attempts low. Tampa's like, screw that. Why? Why would we do that? He's one of the better passers in football. And it works for them, and you're right. Like, they just bring in more talent. Mike Evans and Chris Godwin get older. Cool. Emeka Buka, welcome to the show. Ryan Miller, we're going to bring him in. Kate Otten, we're going to bring him in. Bucky Irving. Bucky Irving is a joy to watch as well. It's just they're chock full of talent. They're not going to be, I think, a 14-win team, but I don't think anyone would be stunned if Tampa Bay wins 12 games and are in the NFC Championship. I don't think anyone would be surprised by that.
And the thing is, oddly enough, like I didn't realize this, that until he got to Tampa, he had yet thrown for 4,000 yards in his career. So Tampa does, in addition to getting him on the cheap initially, they unlock him.
Mm-hmm.
This year looks like more of the same. And again, playing through that shoulder injury in 2022 was the end of Baker Mayfield with the Cleveland Browns. And it is a shame because he is talented enough. Like, you don't get taken first overall for no reason. And Mayfield, in that quarterback class, no less, also has the intensity that not many under center can match.
No, I was talking to people on Twitter last night, and the best way I can describe it, well, and this listener also was like, you know, he's always had that swagger about him that is really alluring, and it is. I put it this way. Yeah, he's always given off the vibe that he could go 12 rounds with Satan and on his day could beat him. Like, he's always given off that vibe, that he has just this unrelenting confidence in himself. And I think, though, the end of his time in Cleveland maybe cracked that facade a little bit. Now in Tampa, no. It's all the way back. He's a joy to watch. And I like that he's in the NFC because I can fully appreciate it. I'm not sitting here, like, you know, looking in the rearview mirror going, oh, hell.
God,
like,
could you imagine if he was still in Cleveland?
Right. There's a fourth one now. You know, C.J. Stroud, we've already kind of gone through that, although it's been a little while since his all-time rookie
year. His shine has
diminished. But, I mean, yeah, could you imagine Baker's in Cleveland and they're still cooking and that went okay, and now they've unlocked it. Yeah, I so I can fully appreciate them over in the NFC with a Tampa team that I really enjoy watching as a neutral fan. 803-0550, the number to call. Speaking of Florida teams, Dolphins week for the Bills. The rivalry, where do you sit with it after years of dominance for the Bills here? They're 10-1 in the 2020s against this Dolphins team. Mike McDaniel may be coaching his last game for the Dolphins, especially with them having a little bit of a stretch here before their week four matchup against the New York Jets. We'll go back to the phones here. Tim is with us next up. Tim, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, guys. Good morning. I appreciate you, as always, having me on. I just wanted to call because the previous caller talked about, you know, the rivalry from the 70s, and I'm on the opposite side of that coin. I'm a Bills fan since early 2000s, born in 93, so I didn't live through any of that back trauma. But, man, my Dolphins hatred is still the same. I just, for whatever it is, the coach with his stupid T-shirts, you know, putting his hand up as a Dolphin, saying, you know, wish it was colder, to their fans basically having us blame the sun for the reason we lost, all that stuff. I really think the common denominator of my hatred is because of the social media era.
Oh, yeah.
Because I go through my Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, and all I have is like 30 bookmarks every single year just ready to fire off. Because every single time you hear a Dolphins fan open their mouth, it's like when they draft like guys like Channing Tindall and they say, oh, this is the Josh Allen stopper or whatever, and it just blows up in their face, and I could not be happier. Long story short, I will be absolutely hate-watching on Thursday. I will be front row to the funeral, dressed better than the previous caller. I promise you that. And then And then lastly, I do want to say, though, I don't think that McDaniel will get fired on Thursday, no matter how it goes, because in his defense, isn't a better test of when you actually fire someone maybe the next week against the Jets? Because if we're just being honest, like, 12 points doesn't even seem like enough for the Bills to cover. And, you know, I think they're going to get blown out. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Isn't the following week with the Jets a better actual test? Like, if they drop that one, then you got to fire them, right?
Yeah, Tim, I like that point there. I do want to get to your social media point, though, because I think that is something to bring up there. But in terms of McDaniel, the reason I look at it, and this is also kind of right to it, is that it's a primetime game. The vibes are already low. You're 0-2. And you mentioned the spread there. It might even go higher for the Bills. It's right now, the last I checked, 12.5. It could go higher. And if you're embarrassed on the national broadcast, if you don't even look competitive against your biggest rival and the team that you were chasing during this coach's entire tenure, that's where I think it's just, okay, yeah, it is time to pull the plug. You've got time before the Dolphins game. With that being said, though, Dolphins is a Monday night game. It's also a primetime game. And let's say Jets are fine week three, whatever. They may be in lose themselves. It's 2-0-3 teams. But Justin Fields looks like he did week one, and right, the Jets win that. And McDaniel's still there. I think that's right. I think really the next 2 weeks, I think one of these weeks he's getting fired.
You've looked at it, though, on the practical standpoint of there's 11 days to the next game, which makes the most sense in this. I also look at it as Chris Greer has already had to fight to keep his job in a power struggle with Brian Flores. I would imagine he pulls shenanigans early to do so. You get embarrassed the first time on national television, try to get rid of him, see if you can at least look better against the Jets and go, see, it was a McDaniel problem.
I wonder if they're tied at the hip now, though, where this is Ross going, you're both gone. And we're just game. We're going to start over.
And again,
kick the can down for this season. We're 0-3, 0-4.
If I'm looking out for my own job,
right,
and there's someone dangling on the rope underneath me and I have a chance to cut it, you think Chris Greer's not cutting the rope?
No, I mean, like, yeah, you're right. Like, this is where, like, the politics come in for in sports organizations. And for many aspects, the GM is sort of the face of the organization in terms of internally. Like, they're kind of the boss. They kind of, you know, they push all the buttons. They make sure, you know, the machine keeps moving. And Greer's been there longer than McDaniel. And you mentioned, like, this would be his fourth coaching change since he's been there.
Right.
I look at it in the practical sense. I could absolutely see this too. Like, they could get blown out and maybe McDaniel stays in the Jets game, especially because that one's at home. If you get blown out there for Monday Night Football, you get the booze. That could absolutely be kind of like, okay, enough is enough. I also look at it too. Really, for me, I think this is it for McDaniel. I do think he is gone before the end of the year. In part two, I can't see him being the head coach if they're this bad, if it continues. Week 11, when they're in Spain, where it's, again, national broadcast. Everyone's watching you. How bad is this going to be again?
Oh, God.
I can't really – there's a few spots here with the Dolphins. And in part, it's because of what the vibes came into the season like. It's a lot like Bill O'Brien a number of years ago when he got fired from Houston Texans early in that season. But the vibes going into that year were already really low. And I think he made it like 3 weeks before he was axed.
Yep. This would technically be 3 weeks.
And so that's where I could really see it. Has it all been McDaniel's fault? No. And I think both of us have agreed. You could argue, and don't get me wrong, I think the shine on McDaniel is really worn off. I think he needs to go back to being a coordinator and really hunker down, because from what I see, again, this outside looking in, I don't think he connects with NFL players at all, outside of he's very smart offensively and knows what he's doing as a coordinator. But I think as a head coach, he really loses it quite quickly.
Yeah.
But a lot of the problems have actually been roster construction. And they're a soft football team. They don't like playing in cold weather. Without it, they can't run their offense. They've got guys that would much rather, it seems like, enjoy the Miami lifestyle than rather be NFL football players. And that falls on Chris Greer. And so that's where I also do think they're tied at the hip, because at this point, it's just not working. And it's not going to start working. That's maybe the worst part if you're a Dolphins fan, is if they do keep going down this road, you're just wasting everyone's time. 803-0550, the number to call. Sal Capaccio joining the show at 11:30 as the Bills will be back on the practice field today. We haven't even mentioned some of the Bills' injuries. We'll do that when we come back. We're also taking your calls, 803-0550, the number if you want to join the show. Give your thoughts on the Bills-Dolphins rivalry. Where do you sit with it? Is this rivalry losing its luster? Or, regardless of what age group you're sitting in, with both Izzy and our last caller there, doesn't matter, baby. The hate runs deep. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And yeah, you're seeing exactly, you know, what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland, you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And Smith expects to be busy tonight. They fake it to him, and Smith throws and is picked up. In fact, on a carom, it's into the hands of Taylor Henley. A dangerous throw, and on the carom, the elite linebacker for the Chargers has a takeaway in the first play.
Game number two of yesterday's Monday night doubleheader. That is Geno Smith, one of his three interceptions.
Chris Fowler wasn't wrong.
No.
He said Geno was going to be busy.
Yeah, he's busy. He's busy.
Wrong type, though.
By the way, Raiders also, the one of the two like really exciting things about them was Brock Bowers, of course, second year. What was he going to do? And Ashton Jeanty.
Oh, boy.
Jeanty so far has not run for 50 yards in a game.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, 43 yards. Week prior, 19 attempts, 38 yards. It has not started off well. He also had a really bad pass pro rep that I didn't see live. I turned this game off after about the first quarter. I had to go to bed, but it was really bad. And I'm like, oof, that's not off to the greatest start. None of the rookie running backs, it feels like, are off to great starts. Travion Henderson's barely getting anything going with New England, and then Amarian Hampton. Same thing with the Chargers. The Chargers, funny enough, with Greg Roman, are throwing the ball, and they're throwing the ball incredibly well. Chargers win that game 20-9, and Justin Herbert continues his very hot start to the year. 70 completion percentage, 242, and two touchdowns. Quinn Johnston, 3 for 71 and a touchdown, that touchdown being a deep ball. Real quick, also, Bills injuries. We have not gotten to mention them yet today. With it being a short week, Bills practice yesterday, albeit in a walkthrough. Two players did not practice. Ed Oliver, as he continues to recover from that ankle, and then the newest addition, Matt Milano, with a pectoral injury. We do not know the severity of that yet. We'll probably get more today. Sal Capaccio will join the show at 11:30. And a reminder, as we do talk about the injury report, it is the Barnes Firm Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Also had three players limited, Taron Johnson, Cam Lewis, and Shaq Thompson. And then good news for Jordan Hancock. He was a full participant yesterday. I will say, though, Derek, and in part why we haven't really brought up the injuries actually all that much, I wonder how much of a role it will play in this game.
And the answer I'm probably going to give you is not much.
Yeah.
Because the Bills are going to do one of two things here. Typically, when they play Miami in primetime, it's not pretty for the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to go one of two ways. Either that, or the Bills win another one-score game.
Yeah. Also, real quick note, too, on the Dolphins' defense as well. Their defensive rank through 2 weeks, 26th in the league. Specifically, their third-down defense, 30th in the league.
Considering Buffalo's numbers probably recovered a decent amount from Sunday.
They did.
Probably by an extreme that we're not ready for.
Well, and so I'm going to say this.
Say it.
Know that the Jets were 0-11 on third downs. Bills' third down defense is first in the league.
Yeah, there's an overcorrection that's happening that kind of puts a little bit to the median. That's ridiculous, though. 0-for-11.
And then real quick here before we take our next timeout, Tim, I did want to mention his social media point here.
Yes.
On that. That is something that has got the rivalry going for me. Like, that was the thing. It was yes, the teams are closer. That was the thing. My point, though, is I'm not the bookmark person. I'm the one that rolls my eyes constantly.
And
so when Nate Geary said yesterday, like, there's got, you know, Dolphins fans usually have that starry-eyed look. For me, it was always, okay, what are we doing here? Like, we're making things up for Dolphins, like, as Dolphins fans. We're making things up to try to, like, convince ourselves this will be the time we finally get them.
I've got the Hard Rock Twitter account tweeting, we need to have a conversation, and it's got Daniel Jones next to Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And it's like, do y'all ever let up? Like, and I get it. The reason is you've lost 13 of the last 14. I understand why you got to be annoying. Because you keep getting effectively pushed down the stairs.
But at a point, like, I don't even get mad. I just, like, I roll my eyes. I'm like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
You're still a 12.5-point underdog. Like, enjoy. Another draft. Get excited. Oh, no, that sucks. They weren't good? No, that's a shame. That's a shame. Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, spending what, 25% of your cap on two wide receivers didn't help you? That's a shame. That sucks. It's just, in every way, the Bills have done it right and have gotten it right. It seems like the Dolphins have done the exact opposite. And now the chickens have come home to roost as the Bills are into their second year of their quote-unquote retool, and they are one of the Super Bowl favorites. The Dolphins are well on their way to maybe being out of a GM and a head coach before the bye. 803-0550, the number to call. Coming up next, week two, top five primetime performers. It was a difficult week. We got there, though. We also got some honorable mentions as well. And then at 11:30, Sal Capaccio will join the show, give us a look in on what to expect with this short week. The Bills already had practice yesterday, albeit in a walkthrough. They'll have practice later this afternoon as well. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. And this is WGR.
Jacket talks about Matt almost with awe. Herbert launches downfield. It's Johnson in stride. Touchdown, Chargers. 60 yards. Justin Herbert just flicks it, and afterwards.
Chris Fowler there on the call. Justin Herbert.
The Chargers are calling a passing game. I don't know what's going on right now.
It's early. I kind of like the shout for him to maybe be early MVP favorite, one of them, because of that feeling around. They're going to run the ball a lot. They're throwing. Oh, they're winning. Chiefs are 0-2, might win the division.
I don't understand.
Keep an eye on the Chargers, baby. Keep an eye on the Chargers.
I don't understand what's going on.
Keep an eye on the Chargers.
Remember how we said the Mirage and Oasis?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I've now likened it to painting the accurate picture. What is the Chargers picture? That's going to be something I'm very interested in going forward.
We'll also see on that as well, Khalil Mack getting images done on his elbow. That injury, I did not see that one live. Saw it this morning. An arm is not supposed to bend that way, and that would be a massive blow for them. And also, Khalil Mack as well, for his career, it is getting towards the end for him. He's been able to put up very good numbers here at the end of his career with the Chargers. That would be an injury, though. You do wonder how much longer he's got in his NFL career. It is 11 o'clock on a Tuesday, and with that, our top five primetime performers. It's been a good week, Derek. It's been a very, very good week. A lot of performances.
It was
a lot of good ones. Hard to come up with this list.
Too good of a week, even. We said we had problems last week.
This week was very, very good. With that, we'll go to the guys that just missed out. Just missed. For me to start, this one was painful. In some ways, I had to come back to it.
Right.
Wide receiver Jamar Chase for the Bengals.
14, he's on your flowers.
He's on my flowers. 14 for 165 and a touchdown. It was a great week for wide receivers. Genuinely a great week for wide receivers. I think what almost made me forget about Jamar Chase's performance, Jake Browning was the quarterback. And Browning, look, they're going to have to ride whatever he's got for the next however many weeks. I mean, what, 3 months, Joe Burrow's going to be out. The Jaguars lost that game. The Bengals not win that. Jake Browning throws three picks, and the Jaguars lose that game. That is a tough look right there.
The first player I'm giving my flowers to on the other side of the football, I'm going with 39-year-old defensive tackle Calais Campbell.
Yeah.
He had two sacks.
Ageless wonder, baby.
Ageless wonder. The man has had himself an incredible career. He's a Hall of Famer in my book. And I hope that he gets into Canton because he's had such a long career, a long productive career, and he already now, in week two, gets two sacks on this season, his age 39 season. Calais Campbell, keeping it going, bringing the boom, helping the Cardinals.
Next honorable mention for me, quarterback Russell Wilson. A wonderful day. If you watched any of that Giants-Cowboys game, it was an offensive fireworks show. It was great. Wilson's deep ball was back over 400 yards. Three touchdowns, including a game-tying one. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Problem was an awful pick in overtime that ultimately does see his team lose that game against Dallas. I wanted to get Wilson on this, but there were so many great performances. That one pick is gonna dock it. It just is. They lose the game because of that.
Similarly, same game, different player, Malik Nabers on my give him flowers list because of the fact that it's being shown that Kaiir Elam is giving up the most yards in the NFL right now. This typically seems like a Cowboy stat too, by the way.
Oh yeah.
But who's covering Nabers on what should have been the game-winning touchdown?
Yep. Not good.
But there was also so many amazing things that happened that somebody has to get bumped on the list. And one of those players for me is Malik Nabers.
Next up for me, sticking with that game, kicker Brandon Aubrey for the Cowboys.
I have Aubrey as well.
I have a tough time putting a kicker on the top five performances. I have no issue putting them on the honorable mentions. 4 for 4, including the kick to force overtime.
60-yard bomb.
And the kick to win the game in overtime, both of them at the death. I think that's the first time that's ever happened. He's like automatic. Me and Mike Shope were talking during one of the breaks in postgame as that game was wrapping up. We both got to a point of like, I think you just let Aubrey kick it. Like, just run it, set up the spot, and let him kick it. That's exactly what the Cowboys did. Surefire. Loved it. It was great. Great drama at the end there.
Exactly. I do have one more player on the list here. Since you went into Aubrey in detail, I just wanted to throw in that he's on there. Joey Bosa. I would love to put a Bills defender on there after the week that they had against the Jets. Unfortunately, though, there was so much that happened. Bosa gets bumped down to the honorable mentions list here, but I'm going to give him his flowers. Two forced fumbles. He has three already on the season. The next best is one. Nobody else has two yet.
It's incredible. Last one for me is actually an entire unit. It's the Falcons defensive line. They had JJ McCarthy in fits. We are now at a point. It's one good quarter through two games for JJ McCarthy, and he's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. Six sacks on the day, including both their rookies getting a sack as well. The Falcons may have a pass rush, and that is exciting for Falcons fans. They have been hunting that down, it feels like, for 15 years.
And timing is everything. Because do we want to get into the top five?
Let's get into the top five. I'll start at five, only because...
I was going to say, I should continue on right now, because number five is the Falcons defense.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, so we're going to have a similar kind of MO here with
yes.
this. So you got the Falcons defense.
I've got the entire defense as a whole here because of the fact that it was an unreal dominance of the Vikings on Sunday Night Football. You mentioned the pass rush. It is also something that needs to be mentioned here. The rookie safeties, Xavier Watts and Billy Bowman, who was on a visit with the Bills. I'm not mad. Each of them has an interception of J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, that Falcons defense, they may have hit a home run there.
They also recover two fumbles.
Mm-hmm.
So six sacks, two picks, two fumble recoveries. Dominance. And you've got to give a shout out to a defense that I do believe allowed the least amount of points in week two. I thought the Bills would be able to keep it with the Jets there at 10. The Falcons went ahead and said, hold my beer.
So where I was going to go with this, at number five for me, because you had mentioned him on your honorable mentions, for me it is Joey Bosa.
Yep.
I think he has been everything the Bills have wanted. He gets one sack, two forced fumbles, seven pressures as well. I think that all only comes in about 15 pass rushing snaps. He's looked like a revelation for the Bills. I've already seen a lot of people tweeting about how this is what the Bills wanted from Von Miller. You can even argue, too, to start both their Bills careers, Bosa's been better. Now, Vaughn looked like this through his first half of his first year.
First eight games.
But arguably, Bosa's looked better. You mentioned it, three forced fumbles in two games, two of them, though, against the Jets. And arguably, Bosa kind of destroys the Jets' offensive game plan almost single-handedly.
Right off the rip.
Yeah, right off the rip. Just an incredible performance for him. So, number five for me, Joey Bosa. Number four, Derek?
Number four, I'm going back to Thursday Night Football.
Okay.
Because sometimes it's not just about the stat line. It's not just about the performance. It's also about the statement. And for me, that's Jordan Love with the Green Bay Packers. 19 of 31, so it's not the most efficient of nights. 292 yards, two touchdowns. But it is also about the Washington Commanders were seen as this, you know, up-and-coming group, a team that should be seen as a threat for years to come. And the Packers, the question is, just how much of this hype is warranted? And right now, Love is the leader of this team. He is playing well, and they made a statement on Thursday night, and that statement is, yeah, those betting odds that increased with us going to the Super Bowl, they're warranted.
They're warranted.
They're warranted, and it is about a statement. And the Packers, with Jordan Love at the helm, look as capable as any to get through the NFC.
Number four for me is going to go much more with the situation that the guy was thrust into. You could also arguably give this kind of spot to his coach, but Mac Jones, backup quarterback for the 49ers, gets thrown into spot duty and arguably has his best game ever. 279 yards, three touchdowns, gets the win over New Orleans. He does this without Kittle. Kyle Juszczyk gets hurt. Brandon Ayuk hasn't even played a snap yet this year. And he looks great. Again, this easily could have been given to Kyle Shanahan, his head coach. There's always been arguments. I'm somebody that is a Brock Purdy hater that thinks a lot of this is due to the coaching. But you know what? Credit Mac Jones. We're going to get to see a lot more backup quarterbacks this week with all the injuries that have happened. I don't know if a single one is going to have a performance like Mac Jones had. Albeit against New Orleans, still gets the win, though. 49ers are 2-0, even with all of these injuries.
Got to take advantage of the situation when it is at hand there. Number three for me is James Cook. Bills had a quiet day rushing the football in week one. The Jets had given up only 53 yards in week one. What does James Cook do? Casually hits that 44-yard home run en route to 132 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. There's no concerns at that point.
That might be my favorite touchdown of his.
Oh, it was so...
That might be my favorite. It's recency bias. I get it, but... I that was beautiful.
The slam dunk against Kansas City is still mine right now.
It's almost unfair because it's the situation that it's in.
The context that it's in and the fact that it uses every modicum of effort that he has to get that ball across the plane is still something to be awed by. But yeah, no, James Cook, number three there on the primetime performers.
Number three for me, wide receiver for the Lions, Amon-Ra St. Brown. This is where, it was a hell of a week for wide receivers. I didn't even mention Brandon Ayuk had a 45-yard rushing touchdown. He also added 91 through the air. But for Amon-Ra St. Brown, 9 for 115, three touchdowns in an embarrassing loss for the Bears. We'll get to more of that here with my number two pick as well. But Amon-Ra St. Brown continues to be the best slot receiver in football. He is an absolute machine. He is the best friend of Jared Goff. And I think also, like, with that situation, like Ben Johnson, you know, he's really one of the main characters of the build-up to the Lions, and the Lions look dreadful against the Green Bay Packers. Now, through 2 weeks, we can kind of maybe look more to, hey, the Packers might just be that good. But the Lions' offense looked dreadful. And they stormed out in week two, 50-plus points, and Amon-Ra, major factor of that. Again, 9 for 115 and three touchdowns. He comes in at number three for me.
And that is a big deal because of the fact that, like, you see the plates are a little wobbly because the Lions lost both their coordinators. They look shaky against the Packers. And, yeah, this might be more of a statement about the Packers now more than anything. Mm-hmm. Or it could be another statement about the Bears, which is not a good thing. Also, remember that god-awful preseason game between the Bills and the Bears?
Yeah, kind of don't matter anymore, does it? Never,
it never matters. And once again, the further points are proven on that sort of thing. Zach, you mentioned something about your number two hinting that it might be another Detroit Lion.
Yeah.
I have St. Brown off of my list, by the way. Oh. That's how crazy this week was. But number two for me is Jared Goff.
Yeah, so we both have the same number two, Jared Goff.
And we can elaborate a little bit more further on this one. Like, three touchdowns to St. Brown, but that's three of five for Jared Goff. 334 yards as the Lions get back on their groove. again, that was needed. That is kind of an antidote that you needed to see happen because of the fact that if you do not make a statement, have a rebound after the Green Bay game, there's a lot of questions suddenly about Dan Campbell and the Lions. Well, for now, you can put those questions to bed. Why? Dominant performance, and it starts with Goff.
Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, you know, another kind of NFC team I can look at and kind of just, you know, wide-eyed, be like, oh, that's so cool for them. Like the whole thing. I'm really glad that it wasn't, you know, the coordinator early. The coordinators leaving didn't cause this all to collapse in on itself. Goff looked wonderful, and the Bears, I mean, the early signs there are not good at all with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams, the relationship there, what they've got cooking, where Goff continues to really have a wonderful second act of his career, is traded to the Lions ultimately because the Rams don't think he's the guy. The Rams do win a Super Bowl that first year with the guy.
Almost proving the point.
And instead of Goff kind of wallowing and kind of disappearing into the ether, because he, of course, goes to the Lions, he instead arguably is maybe their best quarterback they've had in 40 years.
And not even that, also lifting the Lions.
Yeah.
Into heights that they didn't see with Stafford.
Yeah.
Who was their best quarterback draft pick and a player that's still very regaled within Lions fans and the fandom.
And that's why, and I'm a big Stafford guy, still am. But it's the heights that Goff has taken them to. I think there's a real argument. Goff already maybe better than Lion Stafford.
As a Lion, yeah, it is Jared Goff at this point. And good for him on this one. So it's number one time. And this is just how crazy it all got. You had mentioned Ja'Marr Chase already. I had not.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Burrow goes down with injury. And this stops nothing with Ja'Marr Chase. 14 catches, 165 yards, and a touchdown. And they needed every bit of it.
He does it on 16 targets, too, by the way.
And it's efficient.
Yeah.
But he has fed the football because Jake Browning knows the assignment. Ja'Marr Chase is really good. Give him the football.
Mm-hmm.
So now we'll see what happens with Cincinnati. They are, despite everything, 2-0. And, man, they don't ask how, they ask how many. But the how is very interesting. You almost choke against Cleveland. And instead, Cleveland outduels you in that battle. Twice.
Going to be a battle of backup quarterbacks, by the way, next week. Carson Wentz versus Jake Browning.
And now you have Jake Browning for a large portion of your season again. The last time this happened, Browning was scrappy.
Mm-hmm.
He kept the Bengals in a playoff conversation until the final week. They were eliminated in week 17. But Jake Browning played well. Now he needs to do it again in order for Joe Burrow's return to be to a playoff contending team. The good news for the Bengals this time around, Jake Browning's not playing behind the eight ball. They have a 2-0 team leading the AFC North.
They've got a cushion, absolutely.
And Ja'Marr Chase is the biggest reason for that, though. My number one primetime player this week.
For me, I had to go back to the Dallas Giants game. I had to get somebody on this because it looked, to be perfectly honest, it gave last week's Sunday Night Football a run for its money of game of the year. It goes to overtime. There's huge plays right at the end, the whole thing. Couldn't do it for Russ just because of the pick in overtime. I think Russ really could have had an argument for not just being, you know, an honorable mention, but honestly being like one or two on this list if it weren't for that. But on that, I go with the other wide receiver for the Giants. It's not Wandell Robinson, who had himself a great game. And in part, it's also because of Ja'Marr Chase, why he's not on here. I go with Malik Nabers.
Nine LSU receivers
for 167 and two touchdowns. It's why Chase is off the list. He only has the one touchdown. He has the one touchdown. Wandell also only has the one touchdown, where Nabers has the game, should have been arguably the game winner. It's an incredible play. He just streaks down the field. He's got two Cowboys defenders on him, perfectly placed, and he's getting Elam, you know, grabbing at the face mask. It's an unbelievable catch. Nabers, I think, has already, two games into his second year, I think most people would argue he's the top five receiver in the sport. I can't believe the Giants have done it again. Odell Beckham Jr., and now they go back to the LSU pipeline with Malik Nabers. He is an otherworldly talent, 9 for 167 and two touchdowns. He's my number one for this week's top five primetime performers. Just, he's an incredible talent to watch.
It's kind of funny.
how inverse it is. And that's kind of the week that was.
Mm-hmm.
We have an LSU receiver as our number ones, but said LSU receiver is inverse and on the honorable mentions of the others.
Yeah.
But it just tells you how wild the week was that, yeah, we shared Brandon Aubrey on the list and we shared Jared Goff at number two. But it is vastly different between the two of us there. The Falcons defense was close.
Yep.
It was honorable mention versus number five.
Same with Bosa.
But it is. There's so much variance, though, from it that you have some fun with this. And that is what makes this segment great.
I wanted badly when it was happening live. I wanted badly to pick one of the special teams from like Dolphins or Patriots. I can't do that when you both gave up a special teams touchdown.
I
was so excited. I was like, oh yes, like I'm gonna give it to.
I almost gave that sequence.
Sequence is a blast.
The sequence is a blast. That is a beautiful thing to watch. As a neutral fan, like you don't give anyone flowers for it because one side on both teams got victimized, and it's the defending units. But man, is that cool. You got a punt return touchdown, and then immediately on the following kickoff, it goes house.
That was great. But
what it looked like to me there...
Two bad teams playing each other, though.
But it's also something that we can circle back to on our main theme here today. It's also how Miami has just been allergic to taking control of a football game this year.
Mm-hmm.
They had the lead for 12 seconds. They had a lead at another point in that game, but like things started to look like it was going Miami's way. And then immediately, no. You're still in the fight for your life. And then Tua cannot come back. He throws an interception. They have another opportunity, and he takes a sack on fourth down. And the man, I don't even think he had 2 seconds. His lineman got beat so badly. It just, oof. This is where it all comes back to. Can you even trust Miami to win 4 games right now with the offensive line that's currently constructed?
Well, and it's a really good point on that, too. We haven't really been able to touch on their offensive line too much. It's been a lot of their defensive injuries, but Austin Jackson and James Daniels, both on IR, they're the guys on Tua's blind side. They're on the right side of the offensive line. And that's where you're also looking. I mean, I would not be surprised now, coming off the performance they just gave against the Jets, I would be very surprised if the Bills defense was not licking their chops, going, yeah, we can put some road behind us and that Ravens performance.
How many sacks do you think New England got on Sunday?
Oh, I actually don't know. Let's go with 4.
You're close.
5?
It's 5. Tua has been sacked 8 times already this year in 2 games. Mm. The Bills, fresh off of a 4-sack performance against the Jets, and Joey Bosa forcing fumbles at a hilarious rate right now, you think that ball's not getting punched out against Tua?
No, I don't like how this shakes out for the Dolphins at all.
No.
I really don't. For me, I look at where they're at and I'm going, this cannot be good. This cannot be good for them.
A Bills defense that is getting home to the quarterback more, plus an offensive line that is just bad, and a quarterback that has already been turning the football over a bunch of times.
Yeah.
That is enough of a recipe to think this is going to be a disaster on Thursday night, and you and I are going to be here at like 1:30 a.m., sitting in these exact seats, going, yeah, that's exactly how we thought this was going to go. It could not. There's a real chance that, you know, things are different, but how do you go into Thursday night thinking that it's not going to be a potential disaster? That's the problem. Miami is just so bad. And even if the Bills weren't this good, it's how they play the Dolphins as of late. But the Bills are this good. And they stabilized any questions that we had about the defense on Sunday.
Yeah, stabilized is a perfect word for that. We don't know for sure. And they've got injuries. Ed Oliver, Matt Milano, even Teron Johnson. We don't know.
But they told a bad team that they were bad.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes another bad team.
one that might actually objectively be worse.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll get more on this matchup. Bills do have practice later today, and we had our first injury report yesterday. Sal Capaccio will join the show. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
There it is.
You know the jingle. It is Dolphins week, and it is a short week. The Bills have already had a walkthrough practice yesterday. We ran through some of those injuries earlier on, and the Bills are back to work today. So with that, we welcome in on this beautiful Tuesday morning to the Western Hotline, Sal Capaccio. Sal, how are we doing, man?
Pretty good, guys. Pretty good. Good morning to you.
Good morning. So, Sal, we were having some fun. Before we get to the Dolphins, me and Derek were having some fun in the break looking at the stat sheet you threw up on Twitter comparing from week one to week two. And while there's been some stats that have gone like way in a positive direction for the Bills, some have not, namely the rush defense. For how and they did well in week two, but the week one performance was so tough. It's gonna be sticking for a little while.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it just shows to show you how many how things can swing after mm-hmm. such a small sample size, right? It's crazy. They went from 30th to 8th in yards per game right. allowed, which is crazy. They go from 16th passing yards per game to first overall because they played the New York Jets, obviously, and Justin Fields couldn't complete a pass. I mean, pretty crazy. So, look, I think that if you look at these stats right now and where they are, I think you're feeling pretty good about kind of where the defense has settled, except for, of course, the run defense, which is still last in the league in yards per play and 31st in yards per game. You'd like to shore that up, especially against a Dolphins team that's going to want to run against them. But passing defense, suddenly first in the league in passing yards per game against the middle of the pack in passing yards per play. So those are good numbers. And then you look at the points scored, 35.5 per game over two games. The Bills score 30 points or more in each of their first two games. That's obviously something you like. But what I'm impressed with, guys, is they scored 30 points last week, and Josh Allen didn't even account for any of them. I mean, they right. still did that.
And like, Sal, that was something, and it's almost perfect that it came after the Ravens game, where you could argue that was maybe Josh Allen's finest hour in a regular season game. And then he follows it up by, he's fine. He has a really good rush early in the game. He's got a few good throws, but maybe the best throw comes from his backup quarterback because he's got bloody slash broken nose. I think that was perfect for a lot of Bills fans to maybe breathe a sigh of relief of, oh yeah, he doesn't have to win us every single game. He kind of at times can just be almost the bad definition of a game manager, where he's there running the offense and doesn't have to do anything maybe that special.
For sure. I mean, that's kind of the way that the Bills love to script it. We all love to see Josh Allen atop the statistical leaderboards and see him getting the ground and air player of the week nominee and the AFC offensive player of the week award and things. Yeah, it's great. He's the league MVP for a reason. But also, let's remember, I know this sounds crazy. One of the reasons he is the league MVP, he understands what he needs to do or not do in each game. And the Bills understand that. And in this game, they didn't need him to do much. This was a game where they went into New York and said, we're going to control the line of scrimmage. We're going to control this game on defense. And then our offense can kind of, you know, basically control with the running game and make sure that we don't have to put Josh in harm's way and put him back there. And, you know, the Jets have some pretty good pass rushers. And actually, I thought that they did a nice job on the interior, especially getting after Josh a little bit early in the game. So it was nice to see that. And, you know, the Bills leave that game with Josh Allen having very average type of numbers for a passer. But at the same time, you look up and it's 30 points on the scoreboard because James Cook and the rest of the offense did their job.
I was just going to mention that the Bills did not have the best of rushing games last week. But then back on Sunday, there it is. The Bills find themselves the balance that they would like to have in their offense again. And while Allen doesn't have to do much, and even more so, I thought the protection was a little bit of a struggle. It's good to see the Bills getting the ground game back on track.
For sure. And even in game one, I think what they really tried to do was, again, control the game a little bit with the ground game and then wait for the Ravens to make a mistake. The problem was the Ravens never made a mistake until the very end, obviously, when the Bills took advantage. The Jets made plenty of mistakes, right? The Jets 3-and-out and then the fumble right away in the first series of the game. When the other team is making mistakes, and guys, I mean, I'm sure you saw earlier this week, the Bills, you know, knock on wood, they have now the longest, they have the record for the longest streak ever in NFL history in the Super Bowl era of not losing the turnover battle, right? So if you can do that and wait for the other team to make a mistake, generally it's going to happen when you're not making them. And in the Ravens game, it didn't happen. So they kind of couldn't really play like that the whole game. And then it will be, against the Jets, it was like that, where they, you know, made mistakes and the Bills capitalized. And you like to see that running game. And yes, they were benefited by two very long runs, 40-plus yard runs, but they count too, right? I mean, that's what you have James Cook for, and Josh Allen can always bust off a long run. I mean, James Cook, 44-yard touchdown run, pretty incredible, actually. I mean, yes, I know it inflates the stats a little bit, if you will, that way. But it's also the kind of run that's why James Cook is getting paid what he's getting paid, because he can take one to the house like that at any minute.
Yes, and last thing on that before we get really into Dolphins week and the injury report from yesterday. Sal, it feels like at times with Cook, he was not the guy that ran the quote-unquote fastest 40 time. Like, he's not like the 4.2 guy, he's not Chris Johnson. But man, in game, Sal, there are so many plays like that where it does just feel like he's faster than everybody. Game speed, call it what you want, but like, that's the kind of play. He had no business scoring, and yet by the middle of it, he's just running away from guys. It was so impressive by Cook.
Yeah, no doubt. For him to be wrapped up there by the ankle, off balance, to be able to get out of that. I mean, really, guys, I think he has the best vision I've seen from Bills running back since LeSean McCoy. And I know that wasn't long ago, but really, two of the best I've ever seen at it. Mm-hmm. LeSean McCoy and James Cook. I mean, they can see guys like coming out of their ear holes. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, there's guys in the periphery, and they just know where guys are. If you watch that run from the angle of like behind the defense from the all 22 or whatever, I don't know how he sees the guy coming at him. It's incredible. It's the same way with Josh Allen feeling Sauce Gardner coming at him, right? And Josh spins out of it. Like, some great running backs and some great quarterbacks, obviously, they just have this knack and this feel for understanding where people are around them. And for a quarterback, it's generally in the pocket. It's a muddy pocket. They can still stand in there and make throws. You know, Josh felt Sauce Gardner bearing down on him, and I don't know how he did, because he was able to spin away from him and get a nice gain out of it. And then in that one, you see James Cook do this all the time. James Cook gets to the hole, and then he has this stutter step where he moves around somebody because somehow he just feels them. He sees them somehow. I don't know how it is.
Yeah, it's so much fun to watch. Two, though, this week is, of course, a short week. Bills play on Thursday night hosting the Miami Dolphins, potentially the last time the Dolphins will be here at the old Highmark Stadium, depending on how the season does turn out. But so far, Sal, to start for the Dolphins, it's been about as bad as the vibes felt in the summer.
I agree. I think everybody's kind of waiting here for the inevitability of the Dolphins to just kind of really be bad enough where maybe they make a change at coach. I don't think it has to happen quite yet, and I don't think it needs to happen this week, because I don't think the Dolphins, we should be thinking about them coming to Buffalo and just rolling over. That's not going to happen. This is Miami against Buffalo. I mean, this is a storied rivalry, and oh, by the way, the last time the Dolphins most likely are going to be playing inside this stadium. They're fighting for their season. They are looking to do anything they can to stay alive, to save their own jobs. It's coaches. It's players. So, yeah, I mean, it's not going well right now. There's no doubt. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, my God, the Dolphins, you know, any given Sunday, any given Thursday, right? That is true. But I'm not going to sit here and say the Dolphins are the Ravens, or the Dolphins are the Eagles, or the Dolphins are the Chiefs. They're not right now. But it's a divisional game. It's Miami and Buffalo. And, you know, things can happen. The Miami Dolphins were leading the Bills at halftime of a playoff game here at Highmark Stadium not too long ago, when nobody really gave them a shot with Skylar Thompson at quarterback. You just don't know what's going to happen in these games. And I do think, though, that if they come here to Buffalo on Thursday night and it starts to get away early, things could get very, very badly for them. But if they can control the game with the running game, which they're going to want to do, then, you know, that's their path to try and stay in this one and see what happens.
Sal, I want to talk to you about some of the injuries on the Dolphins, but real quick, because this was sort of the topic of the day. We've taken a few callers as well, and I've really enjoyed kind of the difference in generational age groups of where you sit with the Dolphins rivalry. For me, yep. I've always been very open about the fact that, you know, growing up, I knew of Bills Dolphins, and I didn't like them because they're a division rival, but my hatred is far more for the New England Patriots. Like, I hope nothing goes well for that organization as long as I am breathing air. Like, the Tom Brady era hurt me to my core. The Dolphins, it's a divisional rival. I feel a lot like them with the Jets until recently, the last few years, with them being in these close matchups, the division races, what have you. I've come to enjoy it. But at least this year, I was starting to wonder for maybe some Bills fans, because of the fact that in the 2020s and even going into the 2010s, the Bills, I think, have won 13 of the last 14. They're at least 10-1 in the 2020s. Does it still have the same juice, the same fire for people? And the two callers we took, absolutely. They're showing up to the Dolphins, you know, funeral in a three-piece suit, as sharp as they can be. And Sal, I mean, I heard you right there. I imagine you said the same.
It never goes away. It never goes away. It'll be like that for you when you get older with the Patriots, no matter how good or bad the Bills or the Patriots are, right? I mean, it just will never go away from you. You know, for a certain age group, it's the Ottawa Senators for the Sabres, right? Or it's the Carolina Hurricanes. For me, it's the Boston Bruins, right? I mean, because that was your impressionable ages and those memories that just get implanted in you. And in the 80s, it was the Bruins holding the Sabres back every year and all the fights and all that. And it was the Miami Dolphins. I grew up just with everybody telling you how much you're supposed to hate and how much they do hate the Miami Dolphins because of what happened in the 1970s. And that was that generation's Patriots. People growing up and saying, oh my God, they can't beat this team. What do you have to do with Don Shula and beating them? And then they get Dan Marino, right? And you're like, oh my God. But then the Bills get Jim Kelly and things trying to change. Guys, I remember, it's a true story. I remember going to I played Cheektowaga Little Loop football, okay? And we had our banquet at the end of the year. This has got to be early 80s, probably 82, 83, somewhere in there. We have our banquet at the end of the year. And the Bills, they used to bring Buffalo Bills players in. At that time, it was like guys like Fred Smirlis, Jim Haslett, Lucius Sanford. I mean, there was like Eugene Marv, guys that you might not know their names, but they came to like the banquet to say hi to the kids and be part of a round table or whatever. And I remember people, hey, does anybody have any questions for the Bills players? And people would raise their hand. And I'm not kidding you. Like, every question was about how much what can we do about beating the Dolphins? Why is Don Shula on the competition committee? How does the league allow that to happen? How much do you hate? I mean, it's crazy, right? That's how much it was just implanted in your brain. No matter where you went, you couldn't escape it all the time. So as I got older, that's really what it was. In 1990, the Bills have a chance in the playoffs to play the Dolphins, and they're both, you know, one game away from the AFC Championship, 44-34 in the snow, wild game, back and forth. Bills go to the AFC Championship to take on the Raiders the next week, but that was a wild game. And then we've had some great ones over the last few years. Tyler Bass walk-off field goal on a Saturday night here not too long ago, and that was a special moment. And, of course, everybody probably who's listening, most people can remember Brian Cox and everything that went along with him inside the stadium and the double bird coming out of the tunnel to the Bills fans and the fight with Carwell Gardner and the ejection. Man, it just gets me riled up thinking about it.
Well, on a more practical note here, Sal, the Bills injury report, it is, of course, something that is going to be looked at here. Matt Milano, Ed Oliver, the ones that did not practice. A couple players were limited. Taron Johnson, Cam Lewis, Shaq Thompson. Jordan Hancock participating in full, so good news for him, though.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll get an injury update today. So just so everybody is aware, you know, Tuesday is normally a day you don't even hear me usually because it's kind of the day where the team resets and everybody's kind of off and waiting. But there's a Thursday game here. So just so everybody's aware, we're going to hear from Sean McDermott in about an hour from now. And then the team will be on the practice field. They'll have practice. We'll hear from players later. But we will get an injury update from Sean McDermott. Now, the actual injury designations won't come out until tomorrow for the game. Sean will be with me on this show, Extra Point Show, probably a little after 10 a.m. So we'll find out. But what are we looking for when it comes to these injuries? Well, you're right. Jordan Hancock, a full participant. That's great news for the Bills, obviously. But in the meantime, not good news to see Matt Milano did not practice. He's got a pectoral injury. We found that out from Sean McDermott yesterday. That could go one of two ways, guys, right? It could be something minor that he might miss a little bit of time, a couple of weeks. I mean, it's a Thursday game. You'd expect maybe not playing this week. How long after that? Could also be something more major where he's out long term. I mean, this is a type of injury you just don't know which way it goes. We'll get more information today from Sean McDermott. Ed Oliver still with the ankle injury. I'd suspect that he's not playing this week based on the timeline and when that happened. And then Cam Lewis and Taron Johnson both limited. I think that's good news early in the week that they're both already limited, especially Taron Johnson after missing Sunday, trending towards Thursday night.
That's pretty much all we've got there on the Barnsfarm Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnsfarm Injured for Help. Call 1-800-8-MILLION. Sal, it's going to be an interesting one to see what happens here. The Dolphins have played the Bills close, as you've mentioned, four of the last six. Despite all being Bills wins, they've been within one score. So we'll see what happens here on Thursday night. But other than that, we'll let you get going so that you can be ready to hear from Coach here in about an hour's time.
Yep, you got it, guys. We'll have Sean McDermott, and of course, that'll be available at WGR550.com and on the Odyssey app. And of course, follow me along at Sal Sports, and I will have information on what he says.
All right, there is Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. We'll take a quick time out here. We come back, we'll wrap up today's show here on a Tuesday. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. The Natural. Robert Redford, if you have not seen the news from today, did pass away at the age of 89. Obviously famous for the movie The Natural that was actually filmed in parts here in Buffalo. Also for me, though, real quick, I do want to mention this because I love Robert Redford. A lot of his movies are ones that I enjoy watching. I usually actually like a lot of older movies. One of my favorite, if I had to go through a top 10 list, though, All the President's Men absolutely winds up there. I watched it, quote-unquote, a little bit later in life. I was in college the first time I saw it. Obviously, being a journalism student, that movie is basically the Bible for you, and I could rewatch it every year. I love All the President's Men. He plays Bob Woodward in that alongside Dustin Hoffman, who plays Carl Bernstein. It is, of course, the famous Watergate scandal, breaking into the Washington Post, the whole thing. Brilliant actor. Kept working, really, up until the end of his life. And yeah, there's been like some, like I saw this morning and I'm like, man, ooh, that one actually kind of stings a little bit here. It's a lot like for me, Val Kilmer from a few months ago. Like now I really, like that, Val Kilmer passed away and I immediately watched Tombstone. I had to watch Tombstone.
Right.
Tonight might be one of those, me and the girlfriend, you know, settling on the couch. What are you watching? Any sports? No. No, no, no. You're going to watch history right here, baby. We're watching All the President's Men. She's going to hit me, but it's fine. Like I'm going to get punched in the arm, but she's going to enjoy it. It's a great movie. It's such a great movie. Robert Redford passed away today at the age of 89. Had a fun day today. We had a really fun day. Dolphins week, practice coming up in a little bit. Head coach Sean McDermott will be speaking with the media about 12:45. Sal is going to keep you posted on that at Sal Sports. And, of course, we'll also have that entire press conference meeting with you up at our website, WGR550.com, or on the Odyssey app. And we also talked to some fans today, getting connected with them. That is brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at NorthtownKia.com. I loved how fired up Sal got about the rivalry and how much it meant to him. And I also really like the Sabres. The look of it through the Sabres, where there are different rivals that that get you fired up for it through, like, different generations.
There's a lot that hate the Leafs. There's a lot that hate the Senators. There's
Philadelphia.
A lot that hate Boston, Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much – if there's one thing that should and will never go away in sports, it is hate.
Hate watching is the best thing to do.
Absolutely how it goes.
It's the best thing to do. I've said it. It's why I like – college sports so much. Those rivalries run deep. It's also a big reason why I got into soccer, was I loved how deep some of those rivalries went, and even like to some sense politically stated and all that stuff. Like, those ones are hate filled. It's hate watching is one of the best feelings with sports.
And the next time we're on is on game day on Thursday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. But for the moment, coming up next, it is Sabres Live here on WGR.
Paccio here. Now, when it comes to celebrating life's most precious moments, go forth to Firth Jewelers. Whether you're ready to pop the question with an engagement ring or cherish the years gone by with a timeless anniversary band, Firth has the selection that's truly going to capture your emotions. If you're not quite sure what you're looking for, don't worry. They're going to take the time to educate and guide you, ensuring your choice is as special as the moment itself. So for all the moments of your life, go forth to Firth. They are my jeweler and my family's jeweler. Make them your jeweler. Firth Jewelers, Military Road in Niagara Falls.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.